What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for following along as always. I'm sorry for the extended hiatus. Sometimes shit just happens. So it's been almost a month since I've talked to you guys, and I just want to let you know that if you go to www.patreon.com/kindaneat. If you are a loyal listener, and I always say this, but only if you're a loyal listener, if this is your first time tuning in, do not do this. But if you are a loyal listener who enjoys this show and you listen weekly, I'm asking you to help us out. Just go there to patreon.com/kindaneat and pledge like $1 or $2 per episode. And then every time we put out an episode, you help us pay the rent a little bit. And, you know, like I said, at most, we only do 4 episodes a month. So, you know, buy me a coffee, buy me a beer. That's essentially what you're doing. Thank you guys who have been supporting. I appreciate it. All right, let's get into it. One thing that I have noticed about myself in the last month since I've spoken to you is that even though I am sometimes an amoral person or immoral person, I don't know the proper enunciation or spelling, amoral, I don't know, immoral. Sometimes I'm a piece of shit is what I'm getting at. I think that overall I'm a good person. And these are three stories that are going to explain why I think I'm a good person. I know that most of the time in my life, I'm trying to make decisions that will most positively benefit me. But this month, I've noticed a few things that have made me think perhaps I'm making decisions that will benefit strangers as well, which seems nice. All right. So this is the first story. A couple weeks ago, I live on a busy street. I live on Motor Ave in LA. You guys can come find me. Just shout out outside of the window and I'll probably hear you. But I live on a loud street and there's quite a few homeless gentlemen that are in and out of the neighborhood. But the thing is that I know these guys. Like I know I've been living in the same apartment for like 6 years now. And so I know the same dudes that are in the neighborhood all the time. You know, shout out to the homie Smoove. Like I always see him. We talk about the Dodgers and the Clippers, et cetera, et cetera. Like I know the guys that are in the neighborhood frequently. A few weeks ago, there was a dude that came that I just hear like this screaming outside. He's just like yelling and having a clear argument with himself. Like it was a dude having some kind of, you know, a lapse, some sort of mental thing was going on. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but I just hear him screaming and cursing. And I walked to my bathroom window because that's the one that faces the street and I can like clearly hear him. And now my first reaction would usually be like to yell, shut the fuck up. And then if it gets bad enough, I would like, I'm like, this is such an old white dude thing of me, but like, I would call the cops because like, I'm not going to go downstairs. Like, who knows what the fuck? But for some reason this time I decided to like take a different approach. And so I just went out the window and said, hey, and he's like, stop, all of a sudden, like, stop screaming. And I'm like, and he's like, huh? Huh? And I said, hey man, do you need help? And he's like, huh? Yeah. Oh yeah. Like he was kind of in this mode of like almost grunting and groaning like his words. He was in a lot of pain. And I was like, look, man, do you need help? And he's like, yeah, yeah. I was like, do you need an ambulance? He's like, no, 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 not an ambulance. He's like, I just need water. Do you have water? And I'm like, yeah, give me a second and I'll come down. And so at this point in my head, I'm thinking like, all right, like this is the Chicken Little fucking paranoid like shit that the media would have you think like, oh, everything's dangerous. Like my first instinct was like, should I take a baseball bat down with this water? How fucked up is that? I think that's super fucked up that that was my first thought of should I take a baseball bat down? I did not. I just took a bottle of water and I go downstairs and there's a homeless gentleman who's like probably in his mid to late 40s and he's fucking beat up, dude. Like he there was something going on with his arm where his right arm was like completely swollen and as if it had been like just like somebody just put it in a fire or something. Like his skin was so swollen up and like one giant blister and he couldn't move it. And his right hand was probably double the size of his left hand. And so, you know, I get down there and I start talking to him and I just say, hey, are you okay? You know, do you need help? And he's like, I just need water. I just need water. Okay, I gave him the water. He's like, can you open it for me? So I open it for him and I give it to him and I'm like, yo, what's wrong with your arm? He's like, oh, fire. And I'm like, fuck, dude, Jesus Christ. I'm like, have you been to a hospital? He's like, I don't want to go to a hospital. They'll just lock me up. I'm like, okay, so then we will not call an ambulance. And, you know, I ask him his name and I can't remember what his name is now. mind you, this is at about 1 a.m. So this is like, I was already on my way to bed pretty much. But I'm like, look, dude, is there anything else that you need? And other than water, it was at the time when LA was like really fucking cold for a few nights. And this is one of those nights. So it might have been more than a month ago. But he's like, yeah, do you have any shoes? I look down at his shoes and his shoes are fucked. He's got mismatching shoes, like one's a New Balance and one's like a fucking Croc or something, and like there's like no laces, his feet are fucking swollen, and I'm like, I actually do have a shit ton of shoes. So I was just like, yeah, what size are your feet? And he's like, a 12. And I'm like, well, look, I wear an 11 and a half. What's up, ladies? I wear an 11 and a half. Is that okay? And he's like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's okay. So I go upstairs and I grab him this pair of Vans that was still in pretty good condition, but that I just don't wear that frequently. And I saw that his feet were swollen. So like, I'm like, yo, do you need me to take the laces out? He's like, yeah. And so I like take the laces out, pull them out. And at this point he's like, can you help me put them on? Everybody has a little bit of germaphobe in them. And so again, this is like another guilty thought of like, oh God, I'm going to have to fucking touch this guy's feet. Like that's terrifying. But regardless, I was like, all right, I'm already in it. I'm just going to do it. So I like lift his foot up, fucking jam it in the shoe, and then do the same thing for the other one. And I was like, all right, look, there you go. You know, you got some new shoes. Is there anything else I can get you? Cause at this point I'm feeling like I have a bond with the dude. He's like asking me like, oh, you know, what's your name? And I said, my name's Lee. And he's like, oh, that's a good name. That's a good name. I'm like, all right, cool. Thanks, man. And he's telling me about how he had been in the military and et cetera, et cetera. And he's usually lives in Long Beach, but for some reason he's on Motor Avenue that day. And so I was like, look, I have a whole closet full of shit that I'm about to go, you know, sell to Crossroads or whatever. So I was like, do you need pants? And he's like, yeah, I'll take pants. I'm like, you know, I probably have a sweatshirt. And he's like, yeah, I'll take a sweatshirt. And I gave him an old wool hat too. And so it was because it was real cold out that night. So he's like, oh, do you have any bags? So I fucking brought a Rouse bag. Basically, I go upstairs, I grab a plastic Rouse bag, I stuff some pants in it, like two pairs of jeans, and I stuff a sweatshirt in there. And then I take the wool hat down because it's so cold. And he's like, yo, can you help me get the hat on my head? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So I put the hat on his head and I'm like, all right, so look, here's the deal, man. I gave you all this stuff and like, I'm not tripping over the fact that like, if you need to yell, you can yell. I was like, that's fine by me, but just please, like, I want to go to sleep. So just don't yell in front of my window. Like, he's like, well, do you know anywhere I can go sleep? And I'm like, I don't know anywhere that you can go sleep. That's not really my MO. But I was like, look, there's a fucking park bench down there that has cover from the rain if it starts raining because it's a bus stop. I'm like, go sleep there. And he's like, I don't like sleeping on benches. So you're kind of picky. But I was like, look, I'm trying to go to bed. So I gave you all this shit. So I just hope that like, even if you feel like compelled to yell, just walk down the street so I can't hear it. And he's like, all right, okay, cool. And so I'm like, all right, good. And then, so we part ways. I had brought him one extra bottle of water too. And then I go upstairs and I get ready to start going to bed. And then about 5 minutes later, I hear, fuck, bro, this motherfucker, like back to the screaming. And I go, hey, at this point, I'm like, damn, that's fucked up that he did me like that. But I went, hey, and I said his name. I can't remember his name. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, yo, man, I just gave you all them shoes and clothes and hat. I'm like, all I want you to do is not yell in front of my window. Come on, man. I was like, play along. He's like, okay, sorry. And then he like dipped out. And that was the last I ever saw him. Never saw him in the neighborhood again. I probably won't ever. Sometimes we just get a random dude that ends up on the street in front of my apartment screaming. And so that was issue number one. Issue number two that made me feel like a good person was a couple weeks ago. I hear all of a sudden from down the street outside, I hear, let me ride that donkey, let me ride that donkey, let me ride. And I'm like, oh shit, they bringing back the fucking 80s Miami bass shit or like Atlanta bass, wherever that's from. I was like, oh shit, it's lit. Like somebody's cruising down the street listening to Donkey. And I hadn't heard that song in forever. And I actually tweeted real quick. I was like, damn, somebody just cruised by playing Donkey. Like my day is made. And then Donkey turned into another song and I'm like, what the fuck? This car is just like parked here or something? Like it was booming inside of my house. It was so fucking loud. And then another song plays. And then I realized somebody's singing along to these songs. And I look out my window and I can't see where the noise is coming from. But when I say that it's loud, it sounded like I had my own radio on inside of my apartment and was listening to the music that way. And I noticed somebody singing along. And so I go outside because I'm trying to figure it out. And when I go outside, half my neighborhood is outside trying to figure out, like, where the fuck is this loud ass music coming from? It sounded like a damn street fair was going on or something. And it turns out that there was a dude across the street. I'm talking like a good city block away. With a karaoke machine, like a big, like, I don't know, fucking 16-inch karaoke machine thing. And he's singing along, and he's just wailing, singing along to fucking Whitney Houston. He's singing along to Sinead O'Connor. He's singing along to the most random, eclectic mix of music. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, what in the fuck? And none of my neighbors could believe it. They're like, yo, can you believe this guy? And people are walking by on the street. Like, the people walking next to him, their ears must have just been blaring. Like, it was so fucking loud. I could hear it like it was inside. And so, again, my old white guy reaction is like, should I call the cops? Because this is clearly not tight. And I went, you know what, Lee? Don't call the cops. Go be a man. And just be polite. And just ask them to turn it down. And I'm like, you know what? That seems like a good plan. So while everybody's kind of walking around and shaking their head and, like, mind you, it wasn't like instantly that I got fed up. It was like going on for about 40 minutes before I got fed up because I was like, ah, he'll leave. Figuring it was just like a dude waiting for the next bus because he was at a bus stop across the street doing this. And after 40 minutes, and I'm in the middle of the day trying to write emails and shit. I'm like, this is too much. So I walk down again and still people are like, or because I had already walked back upstairs and then I walk back downstairs. People are still kind of shaking their head. People walking by him are like fucking very perturbed. People at the 7-Eleven that he was standing in front of, like, the workers are outside like, what the fuck, you know? So I just walk over to him, I just walk across the street real confidently and I walk over to him and it's like a pretty young dude. It's like, I would say he's like probably maybe between the age of 20 and 23, young, got his shirt off, fucking music blaring, and he's dancing and singing along. He did Thriller at one point. Like, he's doing all that shit, you know, screaming into the mic. And I think that he was like trying to get people to give him change. I'm not really sure. But I just walked over to him and I said, and like he kind of, we made eye contact before I got real close to him. And I just kind of like gave him the head nod, like, what's up? And he was like, hey. And I was like, yo, man. And he like presses pause for a second. And I said, hey, man. I was like, yo, you could sing, dog. I could hear it. You have lungs and you can wail. Cause I could hear that shit all the way in my apartment. And I was like, so here's the deal. I get it. You're out here trying to get your money. Like, do it. Do you. But I was like, just turn it down like halfway. And I pointed out my apartment. I said, you see that apartment way over there? And he's like, yeah. I was like, dude, it sounds like you're in the fucking room with me. So if you could just do me this one personal favor of turning it down a little bit, I think the whole neighborhood would be hyped on that. And he was like, oh, man, I'm sorry. He's like, you know what? I'll take off. Don't worry about it. I said, hey, look, you don't have to take off. Just like turn it down. And he was like, all right, cool. And by the time I'm walking across the street, he had turned it down. And then I took off to go grab a burrito or something. By the time I got back, he was gone. And so I feel like that was a good deed in that, like, you know, I feel like a square would have called the cops and been like, yo, man, there's somebody with a noise violation. That would have really ruined that guy's week, month, year, whatever. If you just man up and go ask somebody politely, the moral of that story is that they will turn it down or they will leave. That was a good thing. Okay, this is my last story of the podcast before we get into my interview with Tommy Genesis. Yesterday was Sunday. Yeah, today's Monday. Yesterday was Sunday. I was walking to my car when I heard a dude like jog by me. It's this young kid. He's like huffing and puffing. He's maybe 19 or 20. He just, oh, fuck, like that, you know, and he passes me. He's coming from behind me, pause, and runs past me. And as he's running past, he has to jump over this bike that's on the ground. It's like kind of an old beat up mountain bike. It looked like it was kind of rusted out in spots and stuff like that. And he jumps over it and then he very abruptly stops and turns around and walks back to the bike and looks down at it. And I already know what's going through his mind. The bike is clearly not locked and somebody had just kind of like dropped it in a hurry and probably ran into an apartment or something. And he's looking down at it like, oh, shit, this is my bike. And he looks at me because I'm like walking up on him at this point. And then he looks down at the bike. He looks back at me. And again, I give him eye contact and a little head nod. And he pulls out an earbud. And I look at him and I say, "Hey, man, that ain't your fucking bike. Leave that shit alone." And he like looks all sad at me, puts his earbud back in, turns around and runs away. And you know what? He didn't touch that fucking bike. And that was my other good deed of the day. So those three things right there are what have made me feel like a good person. And sometimes you just need to feel like a good person. And so go do a good deed for somebody. That's the moral of the story. All right. Having said all that, our guest today is Tommy Genesis. We had a really cool conversation. She's a very easy person to talk to. Interesting story. She's on Awful Records. You know, we've had Father on the show. So it's interesting. Not only just to hear how they met and how she became part of the crew, but we get deep into like family life and what's like growing up into as a mixed kid in a mostly white area. And, I don't know. This was an easy conversation. I think you guys will enjoy it and will become fans of hers. If you have not already become a fan of hers, you will be after this podcast. So, yeah, without any further ado, here's my conversation with Tommy Genesis. What's up? Like, how long have you been in LA? Let's start there.
I've been in LA for like 3 weeks ish. Mm-hmm.
3 weeks? But this is like
how. It's hard to say. I don't remember.
How many times have you been out here, though?
I mean,
dozens?
Nah, like I basically started this whole thing last July. That's when I released like my first kind of like music.
But you had to have been doing stuff before that. That's not like this whole thing.
Yeah, kind of like, yeah. I mean, of course, like right. I grew up playing music. I was in a few different bands. I've always been writing and shit. I'm kind of like an art freak kid.
But like the iteration of Tommy Genesis that just started last summer?
Yeah. I mean, basically, like, if you want to get like as technical as I can get, because I told you before, I have like no concept of time. Like in October is when.
Shout out Prince. Rest in peace.
Yeah. Trying to make me so sad.
No, sorry.
So October last year, Fat Father, I call Father Fat.
From here out, we will refer to Father as Fat, former Kinda Neat guest.
Yeah, I mean, but call him Father if you don't know him, because I'm not trying to perpetuate a nickname that is, I think that's a very intimate nickname.
Okay. So refer to him as Father.
Okay, I'll just say Father. So Father came out to my city in October. We made Vamp, then basically, I didn't really know what was happening with the track. We just hung out, ate some Vietnamese food, had fun, whatever.
Like some kicked pho?
It. No, it was
Banh Mi's?
It's called Look Lak.
Okay.
It's like butter beef. He was really into it.
That sounds amazing.
Yes. I mean, I don't eat meat, but he liked it. Mm-hmm. And then he released that track on Who's Gonna Get Fucked First, and I basically was the only feature not
But that was his, that was his second project, or was that his, the one that just came out?
Not the one that came out, but the one before that.
The one, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I came out on that, and then basically I really love Father. Like, we just connected as friends. He's a really cool person. And for me, when I get to know someone and I just like them, I like, you know, I could make music with them if it works out, but I like to just be your friend, right? So it just happened to actually work out this time where we made a track, fucked with it. He was like, "Hey, you want to be on Awful?"
You got so far ahead of yourself. That was so fast.
It jumped like that. That's how it was. It was like, that's how it was. I was just chilling.
Yeah.
That's like how my life is.
Yeah.
Always happens like that. I'm just here, and then things come my way, and I decide if I want them or not. And like, of course I said yes.
Right.
So then it was kind of like, I was working on music a bit, but I was like, okay, I'm going to finish this album, which was World Vision.
Uh-huh.
Dropped that. Then basically went to Atlanta, met with everyone in Awful, and...
All right, slow down. You're going too far forward. We'll work to that.
I mean, I'm telling you my story.
Let me control this. You're giving me the abridged elevator pitch. I want to get into the mind of Tommy Genesis.
So
first and foremost, you mentioned that Father came out to Vancouver. That's mm-hmm. where you were at.
Yeah.
What, is that where you're born and raised? That's the easiest place to stay.
I mean, I was born around there.
You were born Vancouver-ish?
Yeah, different province, but, you
know. Province? You don't talk about that? Why are
we
you
could
getting
so, talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, talk about it. Like, okay, we have an hour on here, so you can talk
it's
about
it. It's just a little bit, like, I've kind of been, I kind of keep it,
it's, you don't want to give that province any props?
No.
Is that what it
I mean,
is?
Yeah, no,
you're
I
like,
don't.
I don't want to shout this province out.
I don't, like, okay, I was born. I
you
was
don't have
born
to say
in,
it. Why were you? why don't you want to shout it out? Let's talk about that. That's a better reason.
I don't want to shout it out because, like, you know, Canada is a very interesting place. Like, Canada, it's home of a lot of immigrants. And, like, you know, both my parents culturally aren't, like, from Canada. Mm-hmm. My mom was born there, but she, like, you know, it, she's not her. Yeah, her culture doesn't, like, live within the city I was born in, same with my dad. Like, so that's just that's just where they kind of ended up. And growing up in sort of, like, the suburban prairie land that I grew up in wasn't the happiest place to be when, you know, you're not of that country.
Mm-hmm.
So basically...
So, like, the fact that you're a young brown girl growing up in a white suburb was, like,
a
bit of a burden.
Yeah, I experienced a lot of racism, which is strange.
Yeah.
My family's mixed, so, like, both my sisters have white skin and green blue eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting thing is they didn't really experience racism. It was more me and my brother.
Because they fit that social construct of quote-unquote
exactly.
white.
Yeah.
Even though you guys have the same genetics.
Yeah. Right. And they're, and, like, not only white, but, like, we're talking, like, very beautiful girls with big tits and big eyes.
Hey, shout out your sisters.
I love them.
Hey, tell them to come to L.A. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so how did your...
I should say sister. I was talking about one sister.
Oh, one sister.
Yeah,
oh,
one sister.
Damn, shots
the other
fired.
The other one's not old enough yet for me to comment.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, shots fired at the other sister who is apparently not beautiful.
No. She is the most beautiful. She's the baby. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I don't know why I said plural.
You said your mom was born in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So does she? So she's generations. Are your grandparents immigrated over to Canada then, or what? From you said your mom was Scandinavian.
Yeah,
earlier off air you said that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So she's Scandinavian. So her grandparents came over,
mm-hmm.
and so she's Canadian through and through. Your mom?
No.
How so?
I mean, I can't talk to certain relatives. They speak like Swiss German or other languages. Like it's strange because. Often when people immigrate to Canada, they stay within like their little bubble. You know what I mean? Like
right.
if you go to a city, it's different, but like she grew up on a farm. So like, her last name actually means farmer in Sweden. And so in Swedish.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
That's so much coffee.
It also means farmer
yeah,
in Sweden.
Exactly. So that was right. But I find that certain cultures like, they literally like just like pick up and move.
Right.
And when they land, you know, sometimes things don't change that much. Sometimes
right.
they do.
Right.
I value the parts I didn't change in her, if
totally.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that she's like, she seems like off the boat. No, of course not. She was born in Canada, but, yeah, I still can pull from her culture.
No, totally. I feel that because yeah, like, by the American social construct, I am fucking white through and through. But my favorite thing about my mom's side of the family is all the Italian stuff that stayed. You know what I mean? Because my grandmother, her family came over here. And my mom's like first generation to be born here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, going back east, that's like my favorite thing.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, being able to like still get some of the like Italian culture. So that's what you're saying. Like you enjoy your mom's Scandinavian heritage.
I do.
You like to eat like stinky fish and shit like that. That's like the dish over in Sweden is like some terribly stinky fish.
Yeah,
right?
I mean the food's. I mean it's not about just hating on it. Basically, for me, like I try to. It's interesting because I find that a lot of people my age don't really value their heritage or think about it, but I see so much beauty in different cultures,
right.
and maybe that's just the way I am. But I really did not see myself living in Canada for long. And so the fact that I'm over here, but like when I was young, just like with what my dad did at certain points in his life, we traveled a lot to Asia and I got to go to Europe and stuff like that. And I think those experiences really taught me to respect and value. And I think that's why I'm so like, confident about, like, hey, my mom's Scandinavian. Like, I could say Canadian, mm-hmm. you know, but I just like to take it there because, like, that is what I relate to. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Being that you're, like, you're, like, so ethnically ambiguous, but you're definitely, like, a brown girl. You know what I mean? Like, when you go to your mom's, when you go to your mom's, like, family reunions or her side of the family, do you just stick out, like, a sore thumb or what?
I mean, yeah. That's so funny. My head went to, like, our, like, family reunions. There's actually quite a few Ethiopians who are married in as well.
Yeah.
And then, like, my dad's definitely, like, other than that, the dark one.
Yeah.
But her family's so loving. It was more on the other side of my dad's side where, my mom being white and yeah, my dad's parents were not okay with that.
Really?
Oh, hell no. My dad's parents are so traditional, and I could say this on here because I know they're never gonna.
It's fine.
Like, I love them, but my mom almost went. My mom went through, like, hell and back and, like, high water just to, like, to raise us in an environment where we didn't really know a lot about how much religious and racial tension there was in our house.
Before we delve too deep into that, because that sounds super interesting. I just want to ask one quick question about your mom. The province that you don't want to give props to, is that where she grew up? Like, is that
yeah, it's
like the same
province.
One that used to the mm-hmm. same one that you grew up in. That's where she grew up.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't grow up where I was born. I actually grew up kind of up north.
Okay.
But yeah.
Did you know I'm from Alaska?
No, I didn't know that.
Yo, similarly northwestern.
Damn, that's cold.
Yeah, so I probably drove through whatever province you're talking about when I was driving down to California.
So I'm not even trying to be mysterious.
No,
I'm
it's
just
fine.
Not trying to.
I don't want to press you to, like, say talk shit about anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, you know. So I just want, like, we're just delving.
We can leave it.
We're
at
tiptoeing.
That. Yeah.
So your mom and dad, how did they meet?
I think my dad saw my mom playing piano at church.
No way.
And
so your mom's a musician too.
Yeah, my mom taught me. My mom taught me how to play piano. I play piano for.
Mm-hmm. So what ethnicity is your dad then?
So my dad is South Indian.
Okay.
So my tata, which is, like, my dad's dad, is Tamil.
Okay.
And then my dad's mom is Malayalam, which is from Kerala. So basically. Tamil Nadu and Kerala.
I didn't know it was pronounced Kerala, but literally there's, like, a really popular Indian spot across the street from my apartment that's Carolin Food.
Cool.
Like K-E-R.
That's yummy.
I have Indian friends, and I ask them, like, yo, do you know what? I always thought it was Kerala.
Yeah,
I didn't know it was
Kerala. Mm-hmm.
I'll be like, yo, do you know what? Like, what am I supposed to order at a restaurant that serves
Kerala
dosa, food? And they're like, I don't know. I've never heard of that.
Some coconut chutney, some idli, some fish curry there is really good.
Yeah. Crazy. Okay, so now I finally know who to ask about.
Yeah,
Kerala
you can send me that.
Because I always go in there and I'm just like, let me get the tikka masala and shit. Like,
that's
hella,
not bad.
Hella boring.
Low key, just text me the menu, like, take a photo of it, and I'll let you know.
So dad is Indian.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a very kind of insular culture, seemingly. Like, they take a lot of pride in, like, marrying into marrying other Indians, right?
I mean, South Indian culture is a little bit different than North Indian culture.
Uh-huh.
And the only reason, I mean, yes, that is true. When I went to India, I was in my uncle's house for, like, 5 minutes and he tried to marry me off. Like,
right.
Marriage is a really big thing.
Yeah.
But the only reason that I think it was such a big deal is because they are so religious. And it doesn't really transfer to it. The culture doesn't transfer over very elegantly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like they apply this strange belief system to everything.
Right, right.
And it doesn't really, like,
it's
there's
glitches.
It's like
they're trying to understand culture through their own filter, and it doesn't really, like, you know. How did your dad meet your mom in church then, if you're talking about how religious his family is?
Well, because my dad's family converted from Hinduism to Christianity.
Oh, okay.
Because there's, you know, the missionaries in South India.
Oh.
I believe it was Thomas.
Okay.
Who was down there just, you know, converting people.
Shout out Thomas.
Yeah. But actually, my family in South India were, I believe the story is, they were Hindu priests
uh-huh.
of this city called the Holy Mountain. So, like, my family's last name was actually the Holy Mountain.
Wow.
In a different language. And then they converted. Half of them were exiled. So the Christian half were exiled, which was what my family was a part of. And this is all on, I think, my grandma's, my Amici side.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what happens when people convert from Hinduism to Christianity is they kind of just don't actually change anything. They just call it something else and sort of idolize different things and memorize different scriptures. You know what I'm saying? So it's like they're applying the same sort of mentality to a different religion.
Mm.
And what happened in my family is that the, you know, like all the good parts of believing in a God of love is kind of forgotten, and you're kind of just like, okay, well, we got to obey all these rules, and you don't fit into those rules.
Right.
And the way you're talking or the way you look or like all these things, you know? And so,
white people ruin everything.
It's a,
you shook your head like you're right. They do. You just try not to say it, but that's fine. Hey, look, white people ruin everything. I'm going to go on record and say that white people ruin everything. If you have any comments about that, tweet me. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That pop guard is just being such
a bastard. You know
what?
Something else that's really crazy that I found out. So Abra, who's on Awful Records, too, we were just like talking one day and we found out that her mom actually, like, Kerala is not a big state, and her mom's family is also from Kerala. So we could low-key be related, which is crazy.
No way. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy.
That's really crazy. Mm-hmm. You know,
I want to do like a, one day we'll do like a blood test and we'll see.
You guys are like at literal sisters.
Because we literally behave like cousins, and or like we do behave like we're related.
Yeah.
But you know, like.
How fast did that bond form with her? Do you bond with people really instantly?
I mean, like, I love people. So if I do, then I really do.
Are you like super sensitive to bad vibes too? Like, do you get an instant gut feeling when you like somebody?
Yeah, I'm pretty instinctual, but I'm also very rational. So, you know, I'm a very forgiving person usually.
Yeah.
So if we have a bad first encounter, I'm not going to hold that against you.
Right.
But
I mean, I would imagine that maybe you rely a lot on gut, like either the good first impression is like really good or the bad one is like no forgiveness.
I think I'm sometimes really awful at first impressions.
No pun intended.
I could be. Yeah, no. You know, I don't really know what I'm like at first, but I think after a few times I get the gist of where I fit into your life, or, you know, like it's always love, but it's just like how close we get depends on, you know, if we click or not.
Right. Totally.
I'm not, and I never push anything. I don't really, like, if we don't click, I'm not stressed. If we click, I'm pretty happy, but like, you know, I'm very chill.
Right. I feel that. So your dad, does he come over as a kid? Or was he born in Canada?
No, he came over as a kid.
How old was he? Do you know?
I think he was 7.
Does he ever tell stories about, like, you know, the difference between his childhood days in India and his childhood days in Canada? Do you ever ask about that sort of stuff?
I do know some Canadian stories. I know that his childhood in India was really dark and that he didn't come from much or
like. Did you ever did you ever watch Master of None?
No.
The Aziz Ansari series?
Netflix? I didn't know that's... Yeah, actually, I've seen a few. Okay, yes.
There's but that one episode where, like, they delve into, like, where their parents came from.
And
it's like, whoa!
But
it's so, like, touching, that episode. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
That episode's pretty funny. Yeah. I laughed.
Yeah.
I know that when they first came over to Canada, they landed in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And it was snowing. And my Amici was like, okay, well, it's going to be cold, boy. So, you know, we need to go get pants. And she went to the store, I think in the airport, and bought them pants, and they weren't pants. They were like nylon female tights.
No way.
So these little baby Indian boys are like land in Canada wearing tights.
Wow.
And just, you know, the misconception of like weather and just not knowing. And,
right. Totally.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. They learned to play hockey because, they played field hockey. So I think that was like a, once they got
so your dad's
their
like an ice
cold.
Hockey player?
I mean...
Or was? That's so good.
Don't quote me, and I don't think any of it was very well. Like, I actually come from a pretty athletic family. Thought that my grandpa in India was the captain of the Olympic field hockey team, which is crazy.
No way.
Yeah, and then he was also a really good boxer. So
no shit.
They all boxed and like did everything he did just to make him happy.
Yeah, well, so that must have terrified your high school boyfriends then. Oh yeah, my dad's a boxer.
I didn't have any high school boyfriends.
Why?
I mean, I wasn't into guys in high school, and also my older sister, we've already talked about how beautiful she was, kind of just got all the guys. I cut all my hair off. I looked like a boy. My mom used to hand sew me khaki pants, and like I had a little brother, so I'd steal his shirts. We would hang out. I was feminine still, but like I liked boys and I liked girls, but I had a lot of issues with like the liking girls part that I kind of just, I don't know. I never went there.
All right. So your parents meet and in church. Well, first off, how long was it before your grandparents got converted that they're like, yo, we got to up and move to Canada? And why Canada? And why not the States?
Okay. So my Amachi finds, like, so she lives in rural India. Like, this is like, you know, backwater. So it looks like jungle kind of. And like you go fishing and you get your own fish. And they have like all my family over there has like coconut trees, sugarcane fields. Like you grow your own food. Mm-hmm. So like she somehow stumbles across a newspaper. And in the newspaper, there's an advertisement that says we need a scientist and a nurse, and she's a nurse. They're intelligent, so they go to school. Indians like find a way to become educated,
right?
You know, like if they're not educated, then their kids are educated, because that's something that's really important to
totally.
Them. So actually, the story is my grandpa was playing field hockey. His dad didn't approve, so he quit field hockey, became a scientist, met my grandma in a hospital where she was a nurse.
Fixing a field hockey wound.
Yeah. So anyway, so all this happened.
Yeah.
I think they have, you know, they have two kids, which are my uncle and my dad. And she finds this article in the newspaper. And she's like, I'm a nurse. You're a scientist.
This
Let's
is
apply.
Kismet.
Yeah. My grandma was a wild child, kind of. Like, everyone is always like, oh, you remind me of your grandma. Because, like, she would just do things like.
You're like, they're like, you remind me of your grandma. She was a rapper, too.
She was. Yeah, so, I mean, maybe if she was born in this.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
So you have your grandmother's vibe. Okay, so she's a wild child, and then
yeah.
what?
Yeah. So then she applies for it, they get it.
Yeah.
And it's basically, I think they paid for their flight, so they flew over here, and then they're over here.
And that was it. Like, Canada just accepted them, like, here's your, like.
Here's your new life.
Right.
They messed up their names on all the papers.
Now and shit.
But other than that. Here you go.
No way. That's crazy. What year was that around?
I have no concept of time.
I don't know why I find family history so
like
fucking interesting, but it's that story is amazing to me. That's great. So, okay, now we'll get to the point where your mom and dad meet. Did they have to like hide their relationship from your grandparents?
No. They didn't do that, but basically my dad, when they found out kind of about it, they weren't happy, right? And I think like it, you know, it's just like it, they're just a bit racist, like,
totally.
To be
right.
honest. But the funny thing is because after it happened, then it kind of like reversed. And like in India, if you have light skin, you're considered more beautiful. So like, my little sister is really young, so she was an accident and like is 12 right now, and so like doesn't really know any of.
I hope your little sister doesn't
situation.
Like tune in and hear that she's an accident. That's cold blooded.
It's not, because she's the most beautiful thing that's ever happened, and I think that accidents are always.
She's what we would refer
kind.
To as a happy accident.
In my mind, saying she's an accident, it means nothing, because she's probably the most important person in my life. So
okay.
You know, like I hold her on such a high pedestal of love that, you know, I know she would know
for
that.
Sure.
She would just shrug and be like, whatever.
Yeah, right.
She's so cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Wait, so what were you getting
her.
At about?
was I talking about?
I forget. Let's get.
I was saying. Okay, so yeah. So then the racism sort of reversed, and because
she's so light skinned.
Not her, but my older sister. Yeah. Is half Indian, and it has very light skin. So then, they kind of like favorited her, but still disliked my mom. So it's like a very interesting, like, just like the complex that came over with them is strange. And then so that happened, and then I think. They're okay. They're fine with her. You know, there's always like an undertone. But then my uncle also married a Canadian girl.
Yeah.
So like all my cousins, we all look alike because we're all just like mixed.
Yeah.
Cuties. I mean, whatever.
Your dad and your uncle, they just want a little cream for the coffee. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you know that.
Trying to keep it multicultural.
Yeah.
Similarly to, well, when you say that, like, the Scandinavian side, like, they found their little pocket of Scandinavians in Canada, was there an Indian community that your dad grew up with in Canada? Or were they kind of, like, the only brown family?
I think they were the only brown family.
Huh.
And I think that they found, like, you know, here and there, yeah. Then slowly but surely more of their own relatives moved over to Canada, to the States, and, you know.
Do you find yourself more interested? Do you find yourself more interested in one side of the family than the other, as far as, like, when you're talking about tradition? Like, do you find yourself wanting to talk to your grandmother and be like, oh, teach me to make naan, or, like, you know what I mean? Like,
sometimes, but my grandma's so funny. She almost doesn't want to pass on her recipe secrets and will cook really fast, so you don't know what she's doing.
That sounds counterintuitive to Indian cuisine in general, cooking really fast. I feel like everything has to go really slow.
She'll just laugh. She's such a personality. She'll just, like, and you'll try to keep up, and she'll just be laughing at you. And sometimes she'll put on, like, white cooking shows and try to cook the food, and then my grandpa, my tata, just starts yelling at her, being like, stop making casserole again, like, so angry, being like, woman, where's the curry? Like, they're just so stereotypical, just, you know, Indians in Canada.
Yeah.
But they're also, like, because I've met a lot of Indians in Canada, especially in Vancouver. There's a lot of Punjabi girls, and, like, Punjabi girls hate me because, like, the culture is different, and I look different, and I can't really relate to everything. And I mean, I like them, they're beautiful, but there is sort of like a, it's interesting because, like, they're it's more of like a more tropical culture over in like a cold.
The fact that you were doing the dancing hands while you did that though, like,
I talk with my hands,
that's really funny. I was like, wait, is she being racist right now with the So then you're born in this little province, and how old are you before you start to grasp and conceptualize the fact that, like, oh, my older sister's really white looking and I'm brown, and noticing that you get treated different because of it? Do you have a first experience that sticks out in your mind like that?
I mean, when my mom would first pick me up at school, my teachers wouldn't let me go home with her because they'd be like,
they didn't believe
that. That's not your mom.
No way.
And I would have to be like, that's my mom. That's my mom. I'm not adopted.
Wow.
But this is like, we're talking about, like, I really almost don't even like want to take it there because, like, yes, I experienced racism, but nothing compared to like the kind of racism all my friends experience in the States. Like, it's crazy. You know, like, I really have nothing to talk about in contrast.
Right.
But there was just like things like that where, like, if I was with my mom has like blue eyes and like had like blonde hair at the time, and like my mom like is, you know, a beautiful white woman, and I don't look like her at all, but she my mama.
Nice. What were you like as a kid? Like,
I was such a bad kid.
How so?
Okay, you want to hear a kid?
I want to hear all the kids' stories.
Tommy stories? Yeah. So I used to write, like, I'm not kidding. This was probably grade two. I used to write cunt on my socks.
Wow, how'd you learn that word?
I knew the word. I knew about sex. I don't know how, I had like bondage fantasies when I was really little.
Wow.
I don't know what happened.
You know what? I had some weird shit when I was a kid too. Like one time I would see stuff in movies and I would just like know it was bad.
It was probably the movies.
I would just know it was bad and I didn't understand it, but I would be like, I want to be bad like that. Like one time I remember in preschool, I was just standing in line. Like we had to line up against the wall before we went in from recess or whatever. And I was just standing with my middle fingers like this, like, but down at my sides. I had no idea what it meant, but I knew that it was badass. And so I was standing there with my middle fingers pointed down. And the teacher came up to me and goes, Lee, do you know what that means? And I'm like, nope. And she goes, do you think it's nice? And I said, probably not. And that was it. And she's like, yeah, don't do that anymore.
That's so good.
Yeah, yeah.
I love kids.
Or just
kids
little,
are the best.
Just little weird shit. Yeah. I was like, I also... When you talk about having bondage fantasies at a young age, I was like very overtly sexual from a young age too for some reason. I don't understand
why. Like what triggers that?
I don't know.
In your psyche, like what do you, it could be, I don't remember what it was, but I'd obviously seen something.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I don't know if I've told this story on here or not, but I had similarly in preschool, I had a little redheaded girlfriend named Courtney and like we were doing shit that 4-year-old should not know how to, like, we were playing doctor and it was very grotesque in hindsight. And I'm like, what was I doing trying to feel her butt and stuff like that, you know, as a 4-year-old, but I was revved up, ready to go.
Animal instincts.
Yeah. I was revved. I was fully torqued at 4.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway. So you're a bad little kid and you're writing cunt on your sock. What happened? What's the repercussion for that?
I mean, I was really sneaky. I would just take my socks off before I went home.
Mm.
I'd get in trouble at school, and they would write me up, and then I would throw everything, all the evidence away.
Wow. So you're like, yeah, you're like really a sneaky little kid.
I was sneaky.
Did you like make excuses, like notes, yes, from your own parents and stuff like that?
No. It was like I really didn't care about school. It was more like going back home because like my dad was really strict. So like I didn't want to get like beat basically. So I'd be like, okay, well this note says exactly what I did, I'm gonna just drop it. And then, you know, you show up at the time, like schools weren't really on their shit, you show up at home early and they're like, why are you home early? Because I could walk home, so I lived really close and I was young, but they'd let me walk home. Like who knows, I went to a Catholic school, so it was
You went to a Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
is that what your family converted to, is Catholicism?
Mm-mm.
Oh. So what's that like, being an outsider at a Catholic school?
I mean, it probably made me a crazy freak, but like my memories are just like all, you know, there's some cute ones, but there's some really strange ones.
I'm not one of those dudes that has like Catholic schoolgirl fantasies. Like, so I'm not going for that angle of like, oh, tell me about your outfit.
It was
like
also a French Catholic school. I was in French immersion for 12 years.
Wow. So you speak fluent French.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I just more wonder about like the discipline there. Like, was the discipline more strict?
I mean, it was, but
nuns,
I came
did
from,
you have to go to church, all that stuff?
Yeah, we went to church and stuff.
Yeah.
But like the funny thing was is that Catholic school wasn't as strict as like my home, so like to me it was
who
like,
was the disciplinarian, your mom or your dad?
My mom is a pure angel. Like my mom is the reason I'm like a good person. I love my mom. My dad went through some shit, you know. He's a good person, he came out of it good, I'm proud of him, but there is some dark there. That
so your dad's the disciplinarian then? He's very strict.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, see, I like, that's the thing. I was raised Catholic.
I have daddy issues, so, you know,
yeah,
we don't
same.
Have to open that
dude,
box.
Everybody has daddy issues. I really feel like it's very rare for me to meet a musician that has mommy issues and not daddy issues.
Whoa.
You know what I mean?
Maybe if you're a guy.
No. My issues all come from my dad. That's what my
dads,
therapist told me.
Dads hold the power of, like, they can really fuck you up.
Well, it's almost like moms are almost just default there for you, you know what I mean? And dads have to choose whether they're going to be there or not. And a lot of them choose not to be there. And even if they're there, a lot of them choose not to be like emotionally present.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
And that shit fucks you up because it's like, why isn't this person that's responsible for me choosing me?
Do you think it's because women like sort of like breed the baby and like have to deal with it for 9 months and push it out and like have to like be like, you give up so much physically,
yeah,
and emotionally,
oh,
and
I'm
it's
sure
draining, so by the time it's out you have to that's you love it already, as opposed to you just like, you meet the baby when it comes out.
I'm sure there's so much chemistry in it that we don't understand, just of like the subconscious forcing you to tell you. Like, I've always read, like, you know, when the child comes out of the womb, there's actually a blend of chemistry within the air that the mother breathes in and subconsciously like perpetrates or perpetuates an emotional bond to that baby instantly, right? And the thing about dads is similarly, they don't smell that. They don't smell that
just animals,
right? Exactly.
They really are.
That scent doesn't affect them, but what does affect them is that babies come out looking more like the father than the mother. So when the baby comes out, the father sees that and sees himself in the baby, and that's supposed to bond them a little bit emotionally to the baby in a similar way.
Anyway. Do you know what's weird about that is that do you think, okay, because like with like mixed kids, like I've always had like this bond with my dad and I look like him, but I'm not trying to downplay like the bond my sister has with my dad or anything like that. But like in my mind, like I was like, oh, like when I was little, I was like, that's my dad, because it's like, you look like me.
Well, that's why I find it interesting with your situation as well, particularly having sisters that have different skin tone. It made me curious if you were like more drawn to the darker side of your family, or like to, the darker sound, that sounds evil. I mean, the more melanin inclined side of your family.
I was
family.
Talking about this with my friend the other day. I was saying that the fact that I'm able to have a very like liberal sense of culture and like pull from two different places, but still get the credit for being not white versus my older sister, who people just, you know, they don't,
she fits the social construct of white.
She could almost be Persian. Like, she's very beautiful, so it's hard to say, but like, yeah, if you think she's white, you don't really ask her about where she comes from. Right. You just think she's like a beautiful girl. And she doesn't have to deal with, or not deal with, but she doesn't have to continuously answer questions about, you know, where the dark part of her came from.
Right.
And like, for
you probably get asked that on a daily basis.
I do, but I think it's at this point more of like a pickup line that guys probably ask anyone.
Yeah, totally,
you know?
Totally. You have a closer bond with your dad because of that, though.
I mean, but I don't, because it's hard, because my mom really raised me in ways that my dad couldn't have been there for.
Of course.
But I really, when I was little, I would cry that I didn't have light skin, and because my sister has blue eyes. Like, that's really hard when you're little.
Yeah. There is a lot. There is a long time in my life where I didn't think that my dad was my real dad, because he's 6'7", blonde hair, green eyes, and I came out dark brown hair, dark brown eyes, like hairy as fuck. My dad has no chest hair. I look super Italian, Hungarian. You know what I'm saying? And my brother, similarly to you, he's like lanky. He's real skinny and like no body hair like me. And he's blonde hair, blue eyes as well. And so I'm like, if this came out from this guy, like, where did I come from? That was like a thought that I had a lot. I'm like, man, anyway.
Also, I feel bad because I never mentioned my brother, but my brother is like a beautiful, like Cuban looking, like Marc Jacobs model man. Like, he really got the best mix.
Really?
He has like long flowing hair, and yeah.
I mean, shout out to having beautiful families. Some people get the genetic blessings.
Yo, like,
the more you mix, it's, you
the
know,
more you mix.
The more you mix, the better it
I'm
is.
I'm trying to mix. Like,
it's real
tough. Let's get it.
It's
let's
real
go.
Tough. I'm saying. that's so funny. Yeah, wait, but experiencing Catholicism from an outsider's perspective, did you see it as kind of a weird dark religion? Because I grew up Catholic, and in hindsight now I'm like, wow, they were teaching us some really dark shit.
Yeah, I kind of did, yeah. There's a lot of, like, blood imagery. And
so much blood.
And confessions. And
how scary is Jesus on the cross in the back of a church?
Yeah, well,
it's creepy.
Jesus, like, I would get confused between, like, all the priests, and they'd always be like, come confess. And I would be like, what did I do wrong? And then I'd be like, oh, I must have done something wrong. And then as a kid, you learn repression, and you think that like repressing things is God telling you you're being bad. So
totally
repress it, you know? And like,
In hindsight, that's the thing that strikes me so much about Catholicism is that it's very much like, what did you do wrong this week? Not, it doesn't celebrate like doing good stuff. It celebrates not doing bad stuff.
And then
you feel like shit if you do bad stuff. Yeah. But to be honest, I only went to confession once and I was like, this shit ain't for me. Confession is not cool.
I would low key sit in confession being like, should I tell this? Like, I was a young baby and I'd be like, should I talk about like all my dirty thoughts? Like, right. You're a kid. Like, you stick a kid in confession.
You're saying it to like a grown
man.
Yeah,
like
a grown man that's not allowed to have sex. Like, how creepy is that? You know what I mean?
There's a lot of, I mean.
Anyway, shout out Catholicism. Wait, so did you move to Vancouver in high school or just for college, or how did that work?
Yeah, I moved out. I moved out when I was 17, and I moved to Vancouver, and I just lived outside the city.
Well, so let's talk about like your tomboy years in high school, real quick. Like, mm-hmm. what? I guess like, did you get kind of punk rocky or something? Like, what happened?
I had a punk phase. Yeah. I mean, I had phases.
Were you always very creative though?
Like, yeah, I was. I was always painting, drawing.
Like, and you talked about you had to learn really how to play little. Piano.
Yeah, I play piano. My mom's side is really artistic. They all paint and stuff. So, like, my mom was really good. She would always make sure I had, like, crafts. I was, like, the crafty one.
Yeah.
Always so, making shit.
Yeah. Is piano the only only instrument that you learned?
I played the bass clarinet, too.
Swag. Shout out, bass clarinet.
Yeah, I'd have those bass solos.
Yeah.
I played, like, synth. I was in, like, a punk band for a minute. I played, like, drums.
In high school?
No, it's like, when I was 17.
Okay.
But, yeah, I had all kinds of phases. I didn't know who I was at all, you know? I was just in high school.
Yeah, you gotta, like, delve into everything until you find what it really is.
I think I was so sexually repressed that, like, I was really confused and, like, really went through the phases, though. But I ended up kind of in a happy phase. Like when I moved out, I moved into like a punk house. I hung out with my friends, went to art school.
What did your parents think as you were like, okay, I'm out. Like I'm graduated and I'm going to go to art school. I'm dipping to Vancouver. Were they like, cool, go do it?
Yeah. Yeah. So basically they were so strict when I was young. By the time I graduated, I mean, my dad kind of just felt bad and like wanted to be like, okay, do what makes you happy. Cause like, fuck, you know, you weren't really given the chance to fully like, it's hard to explain. Cause I really don't want to get into it, but
right.
It's like,
no, we don't have to.
Yeah. So they are very, now they're much more liberal minded and so supportive that they're almost like of no religion. Like they're just like, you know, they're in a good place and they're just nice people and they're really loving. And I'm so thankful for them in my life at this point in my life. So when I graduated, my mom, I think it's my mom's influence. She's always had like this mentality where it's like, I want you to do what makes you happy, regardless of what your dad thinks, regardless of what this person thinks. Like, I got you, you know?
Yeah, that's
like,
perfect.
Like, I got you. Yeah. So I moved out and like it was fine. Like I didn't feel like I was being rebellious moving out that young. I was just kind of like, okay, I'm going to move out. They're like, okay. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to art school. They're like, okay. I got into like, I at first wanted to go into like architecture and I applied for it and I like got in, but then I was like, I kind of like started to learn more about how it has a lot more to do with design and just, I was more interested in like the art part of it.
It's a lot of math, architecture, I'm sure. Like,
yeah.
It's a lot of like precision, you know?
I think that they have people who like check up on the mathematics of it.
But there's a lot of rules in architecture.
There's
maybe.
Rules, right? Yeah. Yeah. And I was more into just like ideas and concepts and
right.
making things.
It's funny. My mom tried to groom me to like be an architect.
Really?
I always talk about
that's
that.
So
like,
random.
I have a song where I say, you want to do an architect, you got a bleeding heart who creates art instead. Because that's what it was. I was like, I excelled at Legos and I was good at drawing. And she was like, you should be an architect.
I think maybe that's what happened to me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, you're good at, oh, you love to paint houses, or
right.
You're good at structure. Like,
because that's the thing is that people that are in like kind of I don't want to say normal, but that have more like straightforward jobs that are part of the workforce. They see, I think oftentimes they see creativity in their child and they go, how can they make money off this creativity? Yeah. Because there's no money in art. You know what I mean?
Gotcha,
frequently. And so they're like, oh, you should be an architect because then you still draw, but you can actually make money. Didn't work out that way.
I mean, yeah. So, yeah.
Were you excelling at art in high school as well then? Is that what inspired the – or you know what I mean? Like, when did you decide on art school?
It was kind of just like I was painting and drawing a lot at the time.
Did you check out a bunch of different schools and decide on the one that like fit your artistic sensibilities
the most?
There's
really only one good art school or like three good art schools in Canada, and one of them happens to be in Vancouver. So it was kind of like of like the bigger ones. It's like a university.
Yeah.
So I went to Emily Carr.
Shout out Emily Carr.
Yeah.
Did you graduate?
Mm-hmm.
Sick. What'd you get a BA in?
Just fine arts? I started in film.
Yeah.
So, like, that's why I still do a lot of editing. Like, I edit all my own videos and stuff.
Right.
I started in film for, like, 2 years, and then I switched to sculpture. But I just graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still sculpt at all?
Yeah, I mean...
What?
No, like, yes. Emily Carr is kind of like a conceptual art school, so you can, like, actually sculpt if you want. But for me, sculpture was more like the idea behind using different objects, not necessarily, like, the technical skill of sculpting.
Right, gluing a bunch of shit together until it looks like something, yeah?
Or
maybe,
even,
or
I mean, if it's process-based, you can do that. Or if it's, like, I would usually have an idea. I'd be like, okay, well... you know, I'm making this piece about, like, the project is, oh, you have to make a piece about wood. So I would, like, rip walls down until, like, there was wood. And I really fucked with, like, ready-mades, and I really like to do kind of deconstruction of, like, of I almost got expelled. Like, I would just, like, I would break
things. Why'd you almost get expelled?
Because I ripped up all these walls once, because, like, I would always fight with my teachers, and they'd be like, my name's Genesis. They'd be like, Genesis, like, your project has no wood in it. And it would just be so annoying. I'd be like, fine, bitch, you want wood? I would, like, rip all the walls off.
Wow.
Till, like, the wood was there. And, like, you know, but it was very pretty. Like, I was very into aesthetics. I was like, okay, this is pretty. You like it?
That's interesting. Like, you can tell that I think within your music that you're into aesthetic, but also, like, it's this weird combination of the rebellion and the aesthetic together. Like, it sounds pretty, but it also sounds like fuck you, kind of. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I was really into, like, the reason I was into ready-mades is because, like, a lot of the times they'd be like, oh, this is, like, slacker art. So, like, you look at it once and you're like, oh, that's, like, you know, you didn't take that long to make it. But then you really look at it again and it relates to all these other things that are sort of, like, previous histories in art where you can take it somewhere and you can have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. I always have the argument of, like, what is art with people?
I don't even know.
Because I have a lot of friends that aren't, they're not creatives, quote unquote. And so, you know, sometimes I'll catch them hating on shit and I'll be like, look, man, the moment that you have to say, is this really art? That's art. That's when it's art. You
also,
know what I mean?
It's so like pretentious to pretend that you know what art is.
Right, totally.
Like, that's what art is about, not knowing.
Anytime I hear someone say, like, oh, I could have made that, I'm like, but you didn't, and that's why it's art. You know what I mean? Like, because the most simple ideas can come out to be, like, the most beautiful and affecting things.
The thing about going to conceptual art school is that at a certain point in time, people start to make art for other people who know all these concepts and all these theories, and then it sort of escapes the public. So I kind of got into public art because it was like, okay, well, I want my audience to also just be someone who walks in off the street and comes in the gallery and looks at this shit and
gets
it. You
want to be able to affect the layman, not just the expert.
I want it to be kind of like a bodily experience. So I got really into this concept called phenomenology, which is where, like, you make something be something instead of making it be about something. So then the viewer can sort of have an experience on their own without you even having to stand there and talk about the art. Like, I think that's good art. When you see a sculpture or a painting and you can have an emotional or, you know, any type of experience. Like,
like a didactic experience?
No.
No, I'm just kidding.
So don't take
That's
it there.
Inside joke.
Like okay, it could be a bodily experience. It could be the way, like, it's positioned, so you have to walk around it, and, like, it makes you feel a type of way. It could be, like, it's so beautiful, you cry. It could be, like, it relates to a history that everyone knows, so it's not, right. It's a public history, you know, it's not like this pretentious art history that you have to look in a book to see how it's all right. Relative, and if you didn't take that class on 1960s minimalism, you don't know what it is, like,
totally.
All this shit. So I think that when I left art school, I was kind of like, okay, art is great, I love it, but the demographic's so small, so I bet I'm gonna go make music.
Right. But the music is kind of an art project in and of itself. Yeah,
it could be.
It's
yeah,
very much.
I'm just out here chilling. I don't take it seriously, but it is the way I express
You don't take
myself.
It seriously?
I think that
I think you take it seriously.
Well, I take my life seriously.
Yeah,
and it's a part of my life. But I don't. If you were to say to me, "Hey, tomorrow you're not gonna be Tommy Genesis anymore. You're gonna be Genesis, and you're not. No one's gonna give a fuck about the music you make." I honestly wouldn't care. I'd be like, "Okay, well, I'm about to go do something else." Because I'm happy with making music because it makes me happy. But if it didn't make me happy, then I wouldn't be doing it.
Well, and ducks around the next question I was going to ask, because I was like, well, aren't you making the music for yourself? But it sounds completely like you're making the music for yourself then. And so why would you stop if somebody said no one gives a shit about Tommy Genesis? Like, wouldn't you just keep doing it for yourself?
No, like if there was – I mean, because I'm also very rational. Like if it was like, oh, I can't make any money on this.
Would you keep it as a hobby?
Always been my hobby. Yeah. I've been doing it since I was, like, really little. I was always in bands. I was always, like, hanging out with musical kids. I was always
present. Because that becomes a real question the farther along that you go in your career, because I'm at a point in my shit where, like, I remember what it was like when I was just starting and to get out in the public eye, and I was, like, your age and everything seemed so new and exciting, and I was, like, really amped on creating. And now I'm getting older, and it's like, it's one of these things where I'm really having to ask myself, is it something that I'm going to continue to do just for fun?
Gotcha.
And then I look back and I go, well, was this ever art? Cause was I just creating for this, like, validation, or was I doing it because I wanted, or was I doing it for me, or was I doing it to gain an audience? You know what I mean?
These are these existential
crises that I have.
Mm-hmm. I think my issue is I do everything I do for fun. Like, yeah. I really do. I'm all, like I said, all my posts, I'm never smiling because, like, that's maybe a facade, but, like, I'm always smiling.
Right.
I'm like the happy one.
Yeah.
And I really just go with my instinct. But I'm also, I'm strategic. Like, of course I take certain things seriously when I have to, but right. I'm just saying.
Well, even the not smiling, that's a strategy. Come on.
Yeah, but that's maybe just me being vain and being like...
But you thought it out, or else you would be smiling in some of the pictures. You know what I mean? Like, that's strategic.
There's a little bit of a duality in me where, like, that's maybe my stage persona. Cause, like,
and there's nothing wrong with that,
because
that's the thing, is, like, coming up with the persona is part of the art too.
Right, yeah, yeah, of
like,
course.
Like, is there a difference between Genesis and Tommy Genesis? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
People ask me that all the time, and I'm like, at the beginning I thought there was, and now I don't think there's any difference between Lee and Intuition. The same fucking, it's the same cocksucker, you know? So, same piece of shit. No, I was kidding. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get people, like, I'll have my manager, certain people being like, at first be like, wait, are you taking this serious? But then they don't really have to question that, because I do it, and I do it with, like, my best abilities, and I'm having fun. And I think, like, on it, like, genuinely, the moment where I stop having fun, I'll stop doing it. And I think the misconception with musicians and artists is that you really have to take it so seriously to be successful. You don't. You can actually be out here enjoying your fucking life and enjoying yourself.
And the funny thing is, sometimes the songs that you take the least serious are the ones that just spill out of you instantly. And you go, ah, no one else will like this. Those are the ones that are everyone's favorite.
True.
You know what I mean? Like, things are things happen serendipitously sometimes.
Yeah, and that's I'm on that tip. Part.
Yeah, totally. Do you turn up? Like, do you are you like a drinker? Are you do you experiment with drugs? Are you into like expanding your mind?
Nah, I mean, when I was young, I would like get peer pressured into like doing certain things. Like I've like done here and there, but like currently I don't really drink, or I used to smoke a lot of weed. I don't anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really do anything. If I go to Atlanta and I'm hanging out with like all my Atlanta family, like I pretty much drink like red wine with father and Abra. And
little Bartles and James.
I have a little, I need two drinks to be, and I never really get drunk. I think once I had Hennessy for the first time, and like that was not a good night. Mm. And I will never have Hennessy again.
Shout out Hennessy, sponsor of the show.
Good, but let me tell you, I could not walk, and I like mentally I wasn't drunk, but it just like I lost all control of my legs. Yeah. Like I was like, is this?
Oh, Hennessy is one of the darkest drunks. Like gets me so fucked up.
I wasn't happy about it.
We've done photo shoots for Hennessy before, and where there's like infinity Hennessy to drink on set. It turns out it's so hilarious.
I like to always feel kind of in control.
Yeah.
And so like my fantasy is already like exploded in my brain. You know what I mean? Like I already go to those places.
Right.
And I feel pretty confident socially. So I don't really, I'm never like, oh, I need a drink right now. I don't think of it. If it's there and if I'm chilling, I might have one. I don't think there's anything wrong with drugs and alcohol if you don't abuse it. And like, I don't judge anyone. I really don't give a fuck. It's whatever you want
to
do.
I used to drink quite a bit, and I would do my share of drugs. And as I've gotten older, I've kind of slowed down with that pretty heavily. But I think that it's because I'm a control freak.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that at
all?
I hate being out of control of myself.
That's exactly me. Yeah. What's up?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Girl, we got a lot in common, you know? No, I'm just kidding.
You with your cancer tendencies.
I'm a double cancer, I was telling you.
What's your double, like moon? Or like what's your double?
I don't know. I told somebody like
must they, mean your moon or they, your quote ascending unquote, is also did, cancer.
Yeah, I think it's my moon. I'm like cancer, and then I think my moon is cancer too. And
yeah, apparently I'm Leo cancer.
That's pretty rare.
I feel like it would be rare.
Yeah, I'm like apparently that means that I'm a cancer that strives even harder to be more cancerish.
My friend Micah explained it really for me.
That's
like
the thing. Like, you're a Leo, and if your moon is Cancer, that means you're a Leo who strives to be like a Cancer. So.
Or, like, what it is, what my friend was saying, he was saying, like, okay, your sun sign, so, like, I'm a Leo, that's your ship, okay? That's who you are. And then the captain is the moon, so, like, Cancer. So he's, like, steering the ship.
Mm.
And then the ascending is, like, who you want to become and, therefore, who you do become because you strive to become that.
Maybe I got it backwards.
But, like, that's just what one person told me, so I know about astrology.
I don't put a lot. I'll tell you this. I don't think that I've talked about astrology a lot on this podcast.
That's all I know.
So I'm going to like delve into it a little bit and say that like I know a lot of people are probably cringing hearing that stuff and going like, oh my God, astrology. I don't put a lot of faith into it as far as like my day to day, as far as I'm not logging onto the internet and reading my horoscope. You know what I mean? Like that shit, it doesn't do it for me. But what I will say is I dated a girl that was super into astrology shit, and she was putting me up on game for it a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, she was like very into it. So I was like, oh wow, this is a lot of stuff that I've never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like telling me, okay, these are the types of people that you're compatible with.
Oh gosh.
Right. And,
that just messes you.
But here's the thing is that I've noticed like within the themology of my life, I look back on all my best friends that I've had.
Mm-hmm.
Best friends and girlfriends or whatever, and the ones that have been in my life forever, they all are compatible signs like that. And I was like, well, that's kind of weird that like, and I find myself being instantly drawn to like the zodiac
what
signs. It's Taurus, Virgo, Pisces, and Scorpio and Leo. Those are like the people that I'm supposed to get along with real well. And my best friend is a Taurus. Most of my girlfriends end up being Pisces. Like, it's just a weird theme thing. Yeah, it's real crazy. Anyway, blah, blah, blah.
I know nothing.
Yeah, that's the extent of my knowledge. I just made so many people cringe. That's fine. I don't care. All right, so now let's get to the part. This is like, we did like the the movie preamble, right when you started, you're like, it's that scene in a movie where they're like, you got a gun to your head and you're like, damn, this all started 3 weeks ago. Let me tell you the story. So like now we'll get to the part where like, you're in Vancouver, you're in art school, maybe you're graduating art school or whatever. I don't know. But like, how does it get to the point where you're meeting Father? Like how that's
just online. Yeah. I just had, like,
you heard Young Hot Ebony, or had you heard before that?
I was in a band called Juice. So yeah. I was like making music. I was rapping, and I had one mixtape out. It's not out anymore. I'm going to re-release it sometime, but it was called...
Hit me on the DM if you want the bootleg. I got it.
Release that sometime. But basically, Fat heard that mixtape, and like, I think like they heard that shit.
Was it getting posted around places, or like how did he hear it? Is he just that deep in the internet?
He's deep in the internet. Yeah. He's like a genius. Yeah. He gets deep. And Dexter heard it, or someone heard it, something, and they bumped it all the time. And like, it's really weird because looking back, like I just had no idea, but now it's interesting. Actually, it's not interesting. It's crazy how Fat just like picks someone, brings them in, and they just happen to fit within this like slot. And it's like you enter into this new collective where like everyone is kind of like-minded and fucking with each other, and like, but you all have your own lane. Like, there's not another Tommy and Awful. There's not another Abra and Awful. There's not another Keith and Awful. It's just like, there's not another slug.
What I will say after having talked to him is like, beyond him just being a musician with a great ear for his music is great. I love his music, and he's got a great ear for beats, and he's got a great ear for catchy hooks. Every one of his hooks is like an earworm.
Yeah, he's crazy. He has so much unreal.
I think part of that is just being a natural curator, because in order to make beats and pick the beats that you sound great over, you have to be a natural curator as well. And so I'm sure he recognized that inherently of like, I hear this music and I just know that this girl is going to fit in with the rest of the clique. You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm happy he did, because he really put me on. Like, I wasn't looking for it. And then it was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I fit here. And so that's really nice.
How does that go? He just like hits you up like, hey, we've been bumping your shit and we want to meet you.
He was hitting me up. And I wasn't really making music because I was going through some other shit. And then I tried to send him this one thing for his little Diddy album, so like a like kind of way back then, and I was like recording in, I didn't have anything to record with. I was just like, I was actually like running a gallery when I was like young, and I was like, I remember the day I was like painting a wall, like, and he was like, send me something, and I was like, okay, and I recorded like an acapella, and then he ended up just using the beginning of that acapella where I was like, forgive me, Father, for my late ass tracks. And then I went on to the track, and then he used that as a, like a drop.
Right.
Cause I was recording. Like,
that's his, If Young Metro Don't Trust You.
Yeah. That's me. So that's me. Like when we first like linked, and then we kind of just kept in touch, and, it happened really organically. Like, that's kind of how things happen in my life. I don't really push for them. If they happen, they happen.
What brought him up to Vancouver? Did he have a show or something?
He had a show, yeah. And then I was out there, so I was like...
Yeah, And so you guys just linked up and made some music.
Mm-hmm.
The rest is history. I feel like if you guys are interested in the rest of the How Tommy and Awful linked story, she's told it on a dozen different interviews, so we don't really have to delve too much into that.
I hear myself like saying the same things by accident.
I know, and so that was the thing, is like as soon as we jumped in the interview, I'm like, she's going into standard interview mode right now.
Well, it's just like things that
I get it. Yeah. You have to do press, and you have a story that's been
constructed.
I really
hate that I have a standard interview mode, because like, it's like, it's not even, like, it's, I'm not like trying to like pull into the same story to say it out
the same way, but I'm human. The problem is that like journalists, I think a lot of journalists, they don't experience the artist side of things. And so you get the same fucking questions. Oh, so how did you meet Father? Because Father's the fucking SEO. You know what I mean? Tell me about Awful Records. What, like, you know what I mean?
Which I
like,
don't mind doing.
Yeah, no, totally. But it's just like,
I become a boring person I'm like,
what are your influences? Et cetera. That's why I like doing these long forms. Because you can kind of like get into some more shit, and sometimes you have to fall back onto those shitty questions. But most of the time we try to dig a little deeper. Before we go, I do want to ask you like a few questions, just kind of about,
of course,
and I don't want to word them as like, what's it like being a woman in the music industry? But my angle with this is more kind of like, what's it like being out there on social media as a woman that raps? Because I have a lot of, I have a lot of friend girls that are like out here on the internet with a lot of followers, and they're like DMs are just inundated with like dick pics and shitty shit and men being fucking like assholes. And so I'm just curious with you, the fact that like I think a lot of your imagery could be deemed provocative, whether it's intentional or not, and a woman's body shouldn't be sexual until she wants it to be sexual. But I feel like maybe a lot of men on the internet take that as an invite to be too forward. Perhaps is that something that you experience?
Yeah, I mean, I don't open my DMs.
Oh,
well, I just don't.
That
care.
Helps. Well, even on Instagram, can't people just like DM randomly?
Yeah, but I don't look at them.
Oh, you just
them.
Don't even look at them.
If like my friend's like, yo, I DM'd you, I'll look. And I'll be like, okay, cool.
Right.
And like like on Twitter, I'll open. Twitter is more chill. And like you can see like the name. And like I'm like, oh, if I know that person, I'll open it. Otherwise, I just don't even look.
Yeah. Have you had to deal with any outstanding chauvinism in the industry without naming names? Unless you want to name names.
You know what? I know that. I almost feel like, oh, I should deal with this.
Right.
But I don't know if it's because once someone actually talks to me in real life, it just, the conversation doesn't go there.
Right.
But I have to deal with more shit just walking down the street. Like when people don't know who I am, that's the shit that fucking bothers me daily.
Right.
Is like strangers.
Yeah.
Like online, I just don't really get, I'm not sensitive. So if you comment something, I just delete it.
Right.
I don't really like to have banter about it. I'm not interested in kind of like delving into that. I don't get hurt.
Right.
So I'm really like, I don't,
you got thick
I don't
skin.
Know. I don't feel any type of way ever. And I think that maybe that's like the kind of like the tomboy in me, but I just don't ever feel if it happens to me, I just don't care.
Right.
So I don't remember it. You know what I mean?
Totally, totally. Mm. Yeah, that's cool.
And I also, like, if I'm in Atlanta, like, I have, like, 10 guys with me all the time. You know, you're not going to say anything.
Right.
If I'm in LA, I keep really good people around me.
Yeah.
I'm smart. Like, I don't go into places where, and online, like.
Well, that's, but see, that, even that to me.
I just don't remember it, or I ignore it.
And this is more of a, like, a recent realization. I mean, I've been so ignorant to it, I guess, but like just the fact that you have to say, oh, I don't go places that could be threatening, like that's something that you got to understand. Mm-hmm. Like someone that looks like me never has to worry. I don't ever walk someplace where I'm like, oh, this is a threatening place.
Yeah.
Because there are much better targets to pick on than someone that's a fucking 230-pound, 6-foot bald man. You know what I mean? Like, and so as a woman, it's like, that's something that you have to think about of like, oh, I shouldn't walk down this way perhaps
I don't walk anywhere.
You know what I mean? Like that's some bullshit. Like you shouldn't have to feel that way.
But I think your question were like in the industry, like if there is things said about me or, you know, nobody says it to my face and like, I don't go looking for it on the internet.
Totally.
I don't go through my comments. I don't know what's in the comments.
That's good.
Yeah. I just,
those will drive you crazy. Comments are the worst.
I just really have no, I have no interest or desire or I don't care.
Right.
And like, I get so much love too. And like, I love my fans, or I don't even want to call them fans. I love the people that fuck with me. I'm humbled by the fact that they like my art. So it's like, you know, you could say some shit to me, but I'm gonna just like turn this way and leave you talking to yourself because I have all this love over here.
Yeah, that's a good attitude, man. There's no reason to dwell on the shit.
I literally don't remember any. I'm trying to like,
I just always wonder about that because, like, I mean, you know, being a fucking bridge troll like me, I never had to worry about sexual harassment within the music industry. You know what I mean? Like, and I wonder as a female artist,
I mean,
if people are scummy that way, particularly after hearing shit about like Kesha situation or whatever.
Actually, on that tip, daily, I mean, I think guys try with girls all the time, but you just got to be. I'm very blunt. I'm just like, you know. You like no means
I will stab you.
Yeah, I will cut you. Yeah. But like I said, I'm never alone.
Yeah.
I would never like put myself in a situation where I'm alone. Right. So I usually have like someone with me, and they're just like,
They're like, bitch, you don't know who this is?
No, they're just like, no.
Yeah, right.
You know? So.
Yeah, totally. Well, cool. I think we got a lot done. Is there anything else you want to talk about? What?
I don't know. I just laugh.
How do you feel about this? I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. I'm really like shy about... I think I'm shy about...
I think you're full of shit about being shy. No, you're very talkative.
I'm not shy. I'm just like, I never talk about family stuff really because
I know. I find it so interesting because I just think like my family is so fascinating that I bet that everyone's family is pretty fascinating.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like there are way more fascinating families than my own, but this is my story.
But your story is one of the most interesting family stories we've heard.
Really?
I think, because I don't know. Like you have two very distinct cultures that you come from and the conflict mm-hmm. between the two, or not even conflict, but just like, you know, the kind of give and take between the two, the tug of war. I thought your family story was very
interesting. I think what's cool about being a mixed kid is that you really are like a new culture at the end of the day.
Yeah, totally.
But like, that's like
there's
anyone.
A whole generation of like mixed kids that are going through that. This is the first time probably in history that like everyone's having this kind of like, what is my identity
so
type thing. Yeah, absolutely.
It's so hard to like be racist. I really hope that one day, you know, we just mix everything up.
Everyone's woke one day, you know, hopefully everyone is just woke. I think this is good. Cause we were worried beforehand that we had been talking for an hour and we're going to run out of shit to talk about.
Yeah,
not
we didn't.
Not the case.
Yeah.
Didn't happen.
Although the shit we were talking about before would have gone viral if that shit was...
Those were hot takes.
If that shit was public.
So the funny thing is that usually... If ever artists management or whomever their PR are kind of like... They are protective of their artists, so they question mm-hmm. the interviewing, like, what's the interview like? And I'm like, it's anti-gossip. You know what I mean? Like, I try to never get into gossipy shit on this.
Well, it wasn't gossip.
It was just
intimate.
It was out there. And so, yeah, that's the kind of shit where I'm like, oh, don't worry, we're not going to talk about any of that kind of shit.
I mean, one day, we can do it.
I guess we should probably talk a little bit about your music before we dip out, though. So, World Vision 1... World Vision is
dope.
It's kind of, it's almost like, it's like world, it's kind of worldy.
Thank you.
It's a little like, it's like, it's definitively rap, but it's got a little bit of like dance music mixed in. I don't want to say
That's
EDM,
cool.
but it's got some dance music, but it's also kind of worldly.
Mm-hmm.
And, how heavy handed are you in the production process? Or is a lot of that like mm-hmm. you just hand over the vocals and the producers kind of mold it into something?
Yeah, no. Or I don't hand over.
Well, whoever did it, they did a good job of like really turning the ideas into these really big songs, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely like two people, like Andy Shea and this producer God Mode 666. Like there's certain tracks where I made myself, like Hate Demon I made the beat for, Angelina's Father's Beat, Hair Like Water I made the beat. Eden, I made the beat, and then Execute and Shepherd are like this God Mode 666. I feel like he brought kind of like the dancey.
Yeah, Execute is that's a big song.
Yeah,
like that, like not even just numbers wise. That's just like when you listen to it and you're like, oh, this is like a big song.
Yeah, it goes bigger. Yeah. And then I'm trying to think. So the project, me and Andy and everyone kind of like mixed it together. It was kind of like our baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were sitting in the studio. Like, I don't send stuff out.
Yeah.
Just because like I could. It's weird when like you can engineer too. So you know when you send it out and you get it back and you're like,
it doesn't sound how you wanted it to sound.
Mm-hmm. But then I've met people since World Vision, like this homie I'm working with now, West Period, who mm-hmm. like. He can do things that I couldn't even dream of doing, right? So it's like, for me, I actually just handed him the single that I'm about to release to finish mixing because I trust his taste.
Right.
So, like, now I do that. But, like, then when I was kind of just, like, I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'm really going to put my
hand in
the pot.
You got to find that team,
and brain trust. Yeah, so...
Well, so you're working on World Vision 2 now.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, that one's almost done. It's kind of just, like, I'm... getting it to the point where I'm happy with it and I gotta just like tie up some loose ends.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna release that before I go on tour.
Cause you're going out on the road with Father.
Well, I'm going out with father. Yeah. And then I go to Europe.
And then you go to Europe. Are you going to Europe by yourself?
Uh-huh.
Wow, look at you.
I'm a DJ my own set and just go by myself.
Nice. That'll be dope. You're going like literally by yourself?
I'll have a tour manager once I get there.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That's dope, man. All right. Well, fuck, man. Where can the people find you online?
My website is TommyGenesis.com. My Instagram is TommyGenesis. It's like spelled Tommy, like T-O-M-M-Y, Genesis, like the Bible, because my parents named me that after the Bible.
Swag. That's a dope name. I've never met anybody named Genesis.
Yeah, that's my real name. So.
People call you Jenny?
I mean, yeah.
Okay. I was just curious. I'm sorry.
Don't
go up to a Republic and call her Jenny, motherfucker.
It's funny because Genesis is such a long name that as a kid, like, it's a mouthful, so people do call you Jenny or, like, Jenner.
Right.
But I would never answer.
I would have called you Sis.
Yeah, Sis.
No, I'm just kidding.
That one guy.
Honestly, her name has strong enough SEO where you can just Google Tommy Genesis and you'll be able to find her Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, et cetera, because I did all that today, so I know.
That's cute.
Yes. Was it cute? No, it was just, like, necessary. I was like, okay, I gotta, like, do it. I don't want to come in fully ignorant. But, yeah, so Google Tommy Genesis, World Vision. The album is available on YouTube. You can just press play on YouTube and listen to all that. So, but it's available everywhere, I'm sure, iTunes and yada, yada, yada. Peep that. Look for World Vision 2 coming soon.
Yeah, there's some videos on YouTube too. There's X-Cute,
yeah, X-Cute's
Hair Like
a
Waters,
great video. Hair
cute
Like
video.
Water. Yep. And you will find her. Okay, so that being said, this is the part where I do my spiel. Don't forget, we're doing a Patreon drive. Thank you guys, all of you that have supported so far. We appreciate it. We are taking pledges per episode. So if you go there and pledge like $1 or $2 per episode, it helps us pay the rent around here. And that is much appreciated. My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery, at I Am Database, space with two S's. KindaNeat.net is where everything is wrapped up in a pretty package. You can find us on YouTube.com/KindaNeat, where you're going to see Tommy Genesis perform. Which song you think you're going to do? You do A or B?
I don't know.
We'll figure it out. So you're going to see Tommy Genesis on KindaNeat performing. Don't forget to go to the app store, download the podcast app, search for Kinda Neat, and subscribe. That's the easiest way to listen to the podcast. Every week we put one out, it'll just pop up on your fucking phone. It's mad simple. And then if you do that, remember to give a 5-star rating, leave a review, tell us who you want to see on the show. Blah, 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 blah. That's enough. My name is Lee. That was Tommy Genesis.
Bye.
And this was Kinda Neat.